Cebu Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Voices on the Ground, Resistance and Resilience, Friday and Saturday, June 6th and 7th at Portland State University. The keynote speaker will be Sherry Hunkala, a national activist in anti-poverty movements and co-founder of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union and the Poor People's Economic Human Rights. This two-day conference will focus on areas of human rights, criminalization, and pathologizing of identities and experiences, revolutionary tools, and more. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What's the call for you more?
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Free 'Em All, a benefit to support political prisoners, on Saturday, June 14th at 7 p.m. at the Portland State University Smith Memorial Ballroom. Free 'Em All is an evening of music, dance, spoken word, and political remix, featuring David Rovex, international folk singer-songwriter, and emceed by KBOO's own Mike Crenshaw. Again, that's Free 'Em All, a benefit to support political prisoners, on Saturday, June 14th, 7 p.m. at Portland State University Smith Memorial Ballroom. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And stay tuned now to Madness Radio.
What does it mean to be called crazy in a crazy world? Listen to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health, sponsored by peer-run support communities Freedom Center, The Icarus Project, and Portland Hearing Voices. Madness Radio can be heard on FM stations on the Pacifica Radio Network and is streaming, podcasting, and archived at madnessradio.net. Welcome to our new broadcast station, KBOO, in Portland, Oregon. Please join us for a meditation practice day, Zen Peacemaker Circle, led by Zen Buddhist and mental health recovery leader Ed Dagu Knight, especially for people who experience extreme states of consciousness, including bipolar, schizophrenia, and psychosis diagnoses. Everyone is welcome to attend. Saturday, April 10th, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. No one turned away for lack of funds at the beautiful Grotto Retreat in Portland. For more information on the meditation practice day, Saturday, April 10th, contact www.portlandhearingvoices.net. Thanks for joining us today on Madness Radio. This is your host, Will Hall. Today, my guest is Erica Vandenacker. She's calling us from the Netherlands. Erica is a social psychiatric caretaker. She's a member of the Hearing Voices Network internationally. And Erica works in forensic criminal psychiatric settings. She works with people who hear voices and the voices are involved in their criminal behavior, including violent voices. So we're going to be talking about the connection between voices and violence. Erica, thank you for joining us today on Madness Radio.
Thank you for inviting me.
It was really wonderful meeting you at the recent Hearing Voices Congress in Holland and hearing about your work with people who are considered sort of the most scary mental health issues in society, which are people who hear voices and the voices are telling them violent things to kill people or hurt people or commit crimes. And you have a very different perspective on these issues, and I'm really interested in having you on the show. And can you tell us about how you got started with a different perspective on voice hearing and mental health issues?
I saw that the regular things I learned at school did not work, like medication, like distance, professional distance. It did not work. It turned my clients into zombies, and I thought, and later fortunately it has been proved also, that hearing voices or having a mental problem has mostly to do with traumas. And then I think I should give my shoulder for them to lean on.
So you saw that people were over-medicated and really having this kind of zombie effect and their trauma wasn't being addressed. And
I have seen that there is no room for humanity in treating people with a mental illness, and you can't see me, but I'm putting that between marks because I also think a mental illness who decides who is mentally ill. I think that voices come from a trauma. I know there has been spent loads and loads of money on finding a gene for schizophrenia, because most people who hear voices were diagnosed or are still being diagnosed with that disease, also between marks. And I think it's better to spend money on finding out, is it not true that most people who do hear voices have a trauma? And the way you react on traumas by not being able to talk about it, not being able to express your emotions, maybe.
And then how would you work with someone who is experiencing voices and who is diagnosed with schizophrenia, say?
I do talk with the clients. We call them in the Netherlands clients, not patients. Fortunately, that might be a little progress already. And secondly, I do also talk with the voices. And of course, I meet then my clients, because by his mouth, I hear what the voices say, because he has to tell me what the voices say in his head. And we have good conversations, like sometimes my clients get really, really angry or really afraid because one of the voices says, for example, kill Erica. And they don't want to kill me, but the voices want to kill me. And then I talk with my client, but I also talk with the voices. I try with my client to give the voices name. Some voices tell themselves their names. And what I've seen by that, and of course, this is just in 3 seconds, and it might sound very strange, but voices can talk and communicate with me too, if they trust me. They don't trust me in the beginning. I always warn my clients, beware. In the beginning, your voices will say, kill that bitch, that's a fucking bitch, that's whatever, because they're afraid.
The voices are afraid. How do you actually talk with a voice? Does the client become the kind of translator and the intermediary with the voice?
Yeah, I ask first the client if he wants that. And then I talk with the client because I can see and I can notice that the voices are listening. I know that. I can see it by the face of my client, by a smile on a moment which is not appropriate, or by a remark which is not appropriate in a conversation. I know that then the voices are talking.
Yeah, this is very familiar with my own experience and also some of the clients that I've been working with. There's almost like a different personality is living inside of the person.
And you can't stop denying that. So sometimes I can, well, sometimes most, let's say 99%, I can see that, for example, when we're talking about food and my client gives a remark and smiles in a sense, and he's talking, suddenly making a remark about, I'm just saying something, nice girls, then I know one voice is saying something. But that means for me that the voice is listening to our conversation. And then I invite the voice.
And so once the client has themselves agreed to talk with the voice, does the client then tell you what they hear the voice saying and kind of act as a bridge?
Yes. He tells me what the voices are saying. And also the voices are talking directly to me. Of course, by the mouth of my client, because the voices don't have their own voice. They need my client.
So the client says, I hear the voice saying this, and this is what this is what they're telling me in the moment.
Yeah, and sometimes when the conversation is very good, then my client just says, but I mean... And then I know he's saying already literally what the voice is saying. And why I'm mentioning this, that the voice needs the mouth of my client to speak out to me, that is also maybe good to tell when it comes to the violent behavior, like kill yourself, or unfortunately for, I mean, the outside world, of course, not for the people who don't hear voices. Fortunately, most of the things voices are saying, go kill yourself, go jump in front of a train. When I talk with the voices, then sometimes I say to my client, okay, you sit next to me, and then I talk with the voice and I said, you want him to jump for the train? Then go ahead, you jump. And then suddenly the voices recognize that they need the body of my client to do that.
So you tell the voice to just for itself, the voice to go do what it's saying, but then it realizes that actually it's relating to the client and it's kind of trying to convince the client to do something that it can't really do on its own.
Exactly.
And so this is a process that really takes a lot of trust working with clients. This is not something that you would necessarily do, say, in the first session. You talk with someone, you'd build a relationship of trust, and then slowly you get to that point where you can say, hey, let's communicate with your voice. Is that right?
I have noticed that there is such a big taboo about talking about hearing voices that, in my opinion, most people who do hear voices are already glad that I mention it.
So it actually sometimes can happen quite quickly.
Yeah. With this boy, it happened. I met him on the 8th of November 2008, and all my colleagues knew him already and were afraid of him. And I said, okay, I'll pick him up when he comes to live here again. And I saw the boy and I thought, my God, I could see by his face, the way he looked at me, that he was hallucinating. So I went that same night walking with him and I said, maybe it scares you and maybe I say something you don't like, but I know you hear things in your head that I don't hear. Well, a lot of people do mix it with autism, that they don't look at you. But somebody who just hear voices, they do look at you, but I see, what do I see? Well, of course you have to know people, but this boy was hallucinating so much. I could see he was not connecting with me.
So he was sort of distracted, like there was another presence in the conversation.
Exactly.
In a sense.
Exactly. As if he was with me, but waiting all the time for an SMS on his mobile.
It's a very interesting conversation, Erica, because it so much connects with my own voice hearing experiences, which I've talked about on the show a little bit, and I'm still sort of learning about it, and I'm not entirely comfortable to just sort of tell everything that I'm going through, of course, but there is that sense of distraction that you're with the other person, you're in sort of the ordinary world, but then a part of you is very distracted because you're listening to and interacting with hearing, being yelled at by this
exactly.
force
exactly.
that's inside of you.
And, exactly.
And you mentioned, of course, that other professionals, other colleagues are terrified. This is one of the most, I think, taboo topics, voices that are telling people to be suicidal or to kill other people. And so what is the attitude of other professionals? It's look, don't do what you're doing. Don't talk to the voices. In fact, isn't there kind of a professional dogma that says if you talk to the voices, it'll make things worse, or the person will become more upset or more psychotic, or they'll decompensate?
Yeah. But what I always say to my clients and also say to my colleagues is listen to my clients. And I say to my clients too, if you feel comfortable with what I'm doing and if your voices feel that too, then you are the proof of the fact that I'm right.
Do sometimes the clients say, look, I don't want to talk to the voices, or the voices aren't ready to talk?
Yes, of course. It's like when I get a phone call and I see who's calling and I think, no, not now. It's the same. But in the beginning, I first teach my clients that they are the boss of their minds.
So you really respect the choice and the decision of the client to decide
yes.
whether this is something that's helpful and something that they want to do. And you're always checking in with them about how they want to proceed if they do want to talk with the voice or listen to the voice in that moment.
Exactly. But at the other hand, because as what you told about, I work in a forensic setting, the voices can get really violent. And because of that, my client can get violent. Then when I really see that there's something going on, then I say, okay, it might be that you don't want to talk with your voices, but I can see that your voices are talking a lot with you. And I want to know what they have to tell you.
Do you ever sometimes help clients to not listen to their voices, to do some of the things that we've talked about on Madness Radio, sometimes like distraction techniques or wellness techniques to kind of lower the stress that the person is from? And
of course, like listening music. I have one client, he find out that one of his voices is very good at making, I don't know if you know that in America too, Sudokus. So when that voice is coming up a lot, then my client start making the Sudokus. And the voices is giving the answers, and he can watch a television program. Of course I do that. But when it gets too fast, too hard, in the sense of that I see that my client is getting really distracted by the voices, then sometimes I say, I don't care at this moment if you don't want to talk with them, but I do need to talk with them because they've got something to tell. And then every time my client says, after, it can be a session of just 5 minutes. And every time my client says, I feel relieved now.
So it could be a situation where the person is in crisis or there's violence or something that's happening, and you will really encourage or even insist that, look, I really need to talk to your voice right now because something is going on here.
Yes, because I know the voices want to be heard. If they didn't want to be heard, you wouldn't hear them.
Tell us more about this incredible story of the young man, Justin, who's done such wonderful work in his own healing. You say he was in a criminal forensic unit. He had committed some crimes. Tell us about his history of violence and what he came from when you met him.
Well, his history of crime was attacking people with knives, trying to kill people with knives and shovels and when I met him, a very violent, dangerous boy, manipulative, not being able for a reason to talk about things. So I thought when this boy was coming, when I heard that from my colleagues, my God, I'm going to meet the worst man in life.
He was a teenager when he committed these acts of violence?
When I met him, he was 22, but those crimes started when he was 16, 17.
So this is sort of the worst of the worst. This is someone who's actually assaulted people with knives and shovels and is hearing voices. And so this person is locked up, and I imagine he was pretty heavily medicated when you first met him. Is that right?
Well, nobody knew he was hearing voices. They said he had autism and was aggressive and a psychopath.
Were these crimes against his family members or friends, or were these strangers that he attacked? Or
many people might maybe laugh when I say that. No, it was always against caretakers. So against psychiatrists, psychologists, nurses, never to his family.
If you were just tuning in, this is Madness Radio, and our guest today is Erica van den Akker from the Netherlands. She is a social psychiatric caretaker who works in forensic and criminal psychiatric settings. And she works with people who hear violent voices and voices that are involved in criminal behavior. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. So this is someone who is the target of his violence is people who work in mental health.
Well, and I found out how that came when I started talking with his voices. And he has one very smart voice. Peter is a very smart man, speaks English, though my client can't speak English, reads English, though my client can't read English. Don't ask me how that's possible, but I've seen it. And that client, that voice is rejecting against the way my client was being treated.
And so you met him and you were sort of afraid because this is the worst of the worst. This is a very violent
yeah.
Did you feel personally in danger? I mean, you must have felt very anxious when you went into the first meeting with him.
Well, maybe that's strange because I before I met him, I had done this job about 16 years and I never have been in a violent situation with one of my clients. So when I heard my colleagues talk about this boy, I thought, okay, this is going to be the worst person I will ever met in my job. But some of my colleagues have been attacked by him. So I thought, and I said to my colleagues, okay, I'll pick him up. I'm the only one who doesn't have a past with him. Maybe that can be a new opening. So no, I was not afraid. I was just, I must say, very curious because I thought nobody can be that bad.
So when you met him, what was it that you did differently that didn't provoke him?
Well, maybe it sounds strange, but I knew he loved music, and that might sound familiar for all of you. I have always seen that people who hear voices have a lot with music. And I used to work in Portugal, and I sang there in a Brazilian band. So when I met him, and he was taking his CDs out of a car, I said, oh, you love music? I said, oh, I sang in a Portuguese band. Do you know some Portuguese and Brazilian music? Because I needed a connection with him.
And then how did it proceed? How did you actually start to work with him on his voices, and what happened?
Well, that was the first night when I went out walking with him that I had seen him about 12 hours and that I already had said to my colleagues, I'm really sorry, but I think this boy is hallucinating. And then he was a little bit during dinner with other clients talking and saying things that I thought, this is not right. And I said to him, hey, I don't know you so well, but I have half an hour off later. Will we go for a walk? And he said, yes, I love to. And then, well, then what I said already before, I went walking with him and I said, I hope you don't mind that I'm saying it, but I know you hear things that I don't hear. And then he first said, I don't want to talk about it. I said, to me, no problem. I said, but I know because of what you're hearing, you got into trouble. And then he said, I hear two voices immediately.
And no one had ever asked him about that before.
No one had ever asked him. And then we found out he had tried to tell this before, and no one took it seriously.
And so you made a connection with him right away. And then what happened? Did you start doing regular meetings with him? And how did the work progress?
Well, of course, I trained him because I didn't want him to be liable me. He had to train some things too when I was not working, because I told him also, well, it's great that you want to talk with me about it, but what are you going to do when I'm sick, or what when I'm on a holiday, or what when I leave? And so I learned him what he can do himself, and there are little tricks. And maybe because of this boy has a learning disability and he's been in institutes for many years, that he trusted so much on what your psychologists say and what your caretakers say, that he's used to do what people tell him. But he was a perfect example. And then then he said, yeah, but I got angry. And I said, okay, but listen. What can you do? Yeah, I can talk with Peter. Yes, Peter is one of his voices.
So he gave the voices different names, and he had two, you said.
Yeah. It's like, for example, what I did with Justin, and I do with other clients too, is that sometimes I walked into their room without knocking, without present myself, and just saying, jump through the window. And then they looked at me and they said, what the hell are you saying? And I said, well, you could say the same to your voices. Ask who they are and what they want and why they are there. Yeah, and you must not forget, Will, that the voices are listening. I mean, if people are now listening to our conversation and they hear voices, I'm sure that a lot of their voices are listening too, and they have an opinion. If they didn't want to be heard, they were not there. It's like a little child. I can say to my stepson once, okay, not now. And I can say it three times, but then I have to make with him a deal. Okay, Erica is going to do this, and after that I have time for you. Otherwise, it will be a boring little child, yanging, yanging, nagging, 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 and voices are like that too. I'm not saying that the voices are like childs, but their behavior is sometimes like a child. I want to be heard. I'm important. Listen to me. I got something to tell. Of course, those are the voices in my job we hear the most about, are angry. And they want to stand up for my client, but they don't know how to do that because they have, in general, not had the education to find the right words. Like, for example, a therapy, Dieter Karstens, my friend and ex-colleague, also from the Intervoice movement in the Netherlands, had a talk with one of his clients, and she's a friend of mine, but that voice was saying, kill you, kill you, kill you. And after some sessions, we found out that the voice was saying, hey, girl, the way you're living now, you could kill yourself. This is no life. Change for the better. But the voice didn't know the words. And if you care for a person, you can see what is going on. I mean, my husband comes home and I see what's going on, and he will always say nothing. So I'm just mentioning what I think that is going on. That's much easier. But we don't ask each other questions in healthcare. We are afraid to ask about what happened to you. And I think that's the biggest issue why mental health care is no care anymore. We don't want to ask the right questions because we're afraid that maybe some trauma will come up. And then we have to deal with that.
How is this related to the idea of multiple personalities? It sounds like there's some overlap here with the idea of dissociative identity disorder and voices and schizophrenia and multiple personalities. I mean, not to get too much into the categories and labels, but I think a lot of folks listening are going to be thinking, well, this is someone who has different sub-personalities or different kind of split-off parts of themselves. Is that really often what is going on?
How do we diagnose? Is there really, I mean, schizophrenia, you know, in Japan and Korea, we don't use the word anymore. Since the 3rd of October, we don't use the word anymore in the Netherlands. I mean, the people who really want to, it's stigmatizing. Does it help if I say that it is more a multiple personality disorder? Does it help when I say it goes more to schizophrenia? I think that is what makes me so angry when I talk with doctors and psychiatrists, some doctors and psychiatrists. We are people. And some of us are triangles, some of us are rectangles, and we can't fit in one profile. So when it comes to your real question, is it maybe crossing, you know, yourself, I hope that we are trying to get even out of DSM-4, the diagnostic manual of mental disorders, to get the word disorders out. So talking about diagnosis, I think, let's say, I don't care. Maybe my client would say, yeah, it's more multiple personality disorder. If he agrees with it, perfect. But my most important concern is that what we do together with him works for him.
So what kinds of things did his voices start to tell you when you were able to begin to communicate with them?
Well, first, what I always say to, I did say that to Jessa, but I say it to all my clients, the voices are never responsible for the actions. My clients are. It's their hands. It's them who are responsible. Because then what I said, if I walk into a room and tell him to kill my colleague, he's still responsible. So the responsibility is always my client, but the acts, the criminal acts, came out of orders of what the voices said.
When you were working with Justin, did he become violent at any point? Were there times when the voices sort of were exerting too much of an influence and he ended up acting out on the voices?
He was never violent to anyone else, not even verbal violence.
Erica, we have just about run out of time on this really fascinating interview. Can you give us contact information? People want to get in touch with you, and also if they want to get in touch with the International Hearing Voices Network.
Well, the International Community for Hearing Voices, that is www.intervoiceonline.org.
And your email address is alpuvar1@hotmail.com, which is spelled ALPOUVAR and then the number 1@hotmail.com. Erica von den Acker, thank you for joining us today on Madness Radio.
Thank you very much for inviting me. And it was for me a pleasure to talk about my concerns.
You've been listening to an interview with Erica von den Acker. She is a social psychiatric caretaker in the Netherlands. She is a member of the Hearing Voices Network and works with forensic criminal psychiatric settings. Please join us for a meditation practice day, Zen Peacemaker Circle, led by Zen Buddhist and mental health recovery leader Ed Dagu Knight, especially for people who experience extreme states of consciousness, including bipolar, schizophrenia, and psychosis diagnoses. Everyone is welcome to attend. Saturday, April 10th, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. No one turned away for lack of funds at the beautiful Grotto Retreat in Portland. For more information on the meditation practice day, Saturday, April 10th, contact www.portlandhearingvoices.net. That is all the time we have on Madness Radio. Thanks a lot for tuning in. You've been listening to Madness Radio, voices and visions from outside mental health. Madness Radio is co-sponsored by peer-run support communities, Freedom Center, The Icarus Project, and Portland Hearing Voices. Hosted by Will Hall, music producer is John Rice, with technical assistance from Jeremy Lanceman. Listen to our internet stream, podcasts, and show archives at madnessradio.net. Madness Radio can be heard on FM stations on the Pacifica Radio Network, including KBOO in Oregon, WXOJ and WBCR in Massachusetts, Alaska's KWMD, and WPRR in Michigan. If you have an idea for a story or guest on Madness Radio, to help get us broadcast on a station near you, or if you just want to share what's in your head, contact radio@madnessradio.net.
KBOO, Portland.
Time for KBOO News at Noon for June 2nd, 2014. I'm Dan Johnson. Two police officers in the northern state of Uttar Pradesh in India have been fired on charges of criminal conspiracy and for refusing to help search for two missing girls. The girls were later found gang-raped and hanged. Since the firing, the UP government pledged to fast-track court proceedings to prosecute the cops. Failure by police to respond quickly has caused anger and frustration in the village where the girls lived. The father of one victim reported that the police harassed him when he asked for help, but when the police learned he was from a lower caste, they said they would not help. Zoo officials at the Oregon Zoo confirmed that six monkeys died while in quarantine at the Oregon Zoo. The six cotton top monkeys arrived Thursday, May 22nd,